Now it's part two of the book club. We've already spoken to Sylvia Kent, which we do every month. And today's guest is author Vivian Brown. So a very good afternoon to you, Vivian.
Hello, Michelle. Lovely to be here.
Lovely to talk to you too. Now, Vivian has written seven novels and around 150 short stories, articles for professional childcare and nurseries, two e-books and How to Crack a Cryptic Crossword. So you're very, very busy with your writing.
I certainly have been over the years. I do take little breaks every now and then, but if I'm not writing, something feels wrong somehow.
So, Vivian, when did you discover your love for writing?
Oh, I think it's always been there. I think with most writers, it's a sort of natural thing that bubbles up when you're a teenager. Starts off with little poems and things, and then you do a few essays at school and realise you've got a talent. But I probably did put it aside for quite a long time. Until I found myself at home with young children, not having to go to work every day, and suddenly had the time and the inclination to take it more seriously.
Because you actually started off in banking and finance, didn't you?
Yes, very much a numbers person instead of a words person, which wasn't really the right path for me, but it took a long time to realise that, I think. And somewhere behind all those numbers and accountancy and things, I knew that I wanted to write.
And was this at about the same time as the Sure Start Library, or is this a little bit later?
Well, I'd worked in banking and finance jobs all my life, really, and then I had quite a long break because I gave birth to twins.
Wow.
And trying to get childcare, the cost of childcare, it was easier, really, to just have a few years at home. So I needed a different path, and I started to do a bit of childminding at home and realised how much I enjoyed spending my time with young children. So when I did go back to work, I found myself a job with the local authority library service, actually working with the under fives, which was fantastic. I was able to do story times for them in the library, get them interested in reading, and all my love of words and reading was sort of passed on to very young children, which was a fantastic job to do. I still miss it now.
Now, you've written over 150 short stories, which have been published in women's magazines. How did you start that writing process? Did you just get an idea come into your head, or are you out shopping and suddenly go, oh, I must write this down? How does it work for you?
There are always ideas in the head.
Yeah.
I think what really directed me in that way was joining an evening class, a local government adult education class, which gave me a really broad look at writing of all kinds. The tutor was really a specialist in articles for magazines, but she taught us a little bit of everything. And we were a class of probably a dozen people, all new to writing, all keen to learn. And we had a go at everything. We tried short stories, we tried poetry, we tried factual stuff. And I think out of that comes a sort of, which did I like doing the best? Which did I most enjoy? And the fiction was certainly the thing that grabbed me. And much easier, I think, to write a short story, which only perhaps takes a few days to put together, than to dive straight into a novel, which is a major undertaking. So I started with short stories. I started sending them out to magazines. I got a success with Woman's Weekly, my first one. A Christmas story about a Father Christmas working in a department store. And once that was accepted and they paid me for it, I thought, ooh, I can do this. You know, I can actually make a bit of money from writing. I can get other people to read what I've written. And I just started writing stories whenever I could, really.
Now, you also, besides writing 150 short stories, which is an amazing amount, you've done cracking cryptic crosswords.
Yeah, my dad taught me to do crosswords probably when I was about 9 or 10.
Yep.
I'm bored with the ordinary general knowledge type of crossword. We can just pick up a dictionary and find the answer. There's no challenge in that to me. It's the cryptic ones that have always appealed to me. And I suppose my dad sort of did one every day and I would help him and then I'd start to understand how they worked. And it's something that I now do every single day. I can't imagine a day when I don't do at least one crossword. And understanding all the complexities, not only of the anagrams, but all the little hidden things that happen in cryptic clues. And there are simple ones you can do, and there are much more complex ones you can do. So on a day when I feel like a challenge, I might pick up the Financial Times and do the crossword in there.
Yes.
When I just want it a bit simpler, I do the Daily Mail, which I can rattle off in probably 10 or 12 minutes. So I wanted to pass that knowledge on, and I wrote a little how-to book, which got picked up by a publisher called How To Books at the time. It's been taken over by various publishers since then. And I published it in the 100th year of the crossword, which is 2013, when cryptic crosswords any sort of crossword had its centenary, so it was kind of an in thing to write about crosswords. And it's done quite well. People still buy it now, 9 years later, because it's a sort of subject that never goes out of fashion, really.
My mum used to love a cryptic. I can't do the normal crosswords, not too bad. My mum said it used to keep, you know, she was a pensioner, used to keep her brain going. She said you must do a crossword every day. It keeps your, keeps your brain ticking over.
Absolutely. There's always research coming out that says it helps beat dementia. I don't know if it could go quite that far, but it keeps your brain active. It gives your little brain cells something to do. And it doesn't take a big chunk out of your day, but it's quite fun to do. I just love them, and I started compiling a few myself as well. So I do that as a little sideline for clients or for family. I do a very personalised cryptic crossword for them, where all the clues are something to do with them or their life. And that may take me a few days to put together, but I absolutely love doing it. It's like putting a puzzle together.
Now, you're a member of the Romantic Novelist Association and a fellow of the Society of Women Writers and Journalists.
Yep, the Romantic Novelists are a great organisation for not just for women, there are some male members too, but predominantly women writers who are writing romance of any kind. It doesn't have to be the Mills and Boone, Hearts and Flowers type of romance. We have fantasy writers, psychological thrillers, as long as there's a romantic thread running through the story, then you can join the Romantic Novelist Association. And they have a fantastic scheme for new writers, people just trying to write their very first novel who want a bit of help. And for an annual fee, they get access to all the events, all the networking that the association can provide. We've got about 1,000 members.
Yeah.
But they also get a full critique of that novel in progress, a really helpful in-depth critique of how they can improve it, how they might be able to publish it. And I found that really, really useful when I was starting out, getting critiques of what I was writing from someone who actually knows the business, who actually knows that genre of writing. And I think anyone thinking of writing any sort of romantic fiction, it's well worth joining the new writer scheme.
Now let's talk about the novels. You had your debut, which was Lily Alone. Tell us about that book and what it was like to actually put it together.
Well, yeah, I'd written a couple of earlier novels under a previous name and had them published as e-books. But this was my, what I would call my big break. This was actually meeting with a real commercial publisher, signing a proper contract to write a book, in fact, to write two books.
Yeah.
And then meeting with an editor who gives you all the input, reads it, tells you what they like to be changed. It was a whole different thing from just sitting writing by myself.
Mm-hmm.
Suddenly there was this professional editor sending me lists of things about my characters that she thought weren't working, things that she wanted me to look at. And that can only make your writing better.
Yeah.
It can only help you produce a much better book in the end. And Lily Alone was... It was hard to categorise. It wasn't a romance. It wasn't a thriller. It was women's fiction, which my editor sort of struggled to put a label on. And in the end, we decided to call it domestic drama.
Mm.
And that's the genre I've stuck with ever since, which is things happening within families, within friendships, betrayals, lies, the problems going on in relationships, all the things that normal women experience and that evoke a sort of emotional response from the reader, I suppose. And all my novels since have had that kind of feel to them.
And what sort of time period are they set in? They're all different.
No, very much contemporary. Sometimes I might spread them over a few years, but we're not talking historical in any way.
Mm.
One of them actually does start in the 70s and follows a marriage all the way through to the present day, so I suppose that one does span 40 or 50 years. But most of them are very, very contemporary, perhaps take place just over a year or so. You know, the action follows the characters for a year, but they're very much now. I'm not a research kind of person.
Mm.
I know a lot of novelists like to dig back and look at the World War II and find out what life was like then and feed it into their books. I very much look at what life is like now, what my life has been like, what's going on around me, and all my books are very much set in the present day.
Have you ever met anyone and thought, oh, she's got to be in my book, but I'm going to have to change her name?
Oh, I think a lot of people you meet creep into your books in subtle ways.
Yep.
It's not just pick up a character, plonk them in a book and change their name. I think that's that's never going to work. Characters are a combination of people you meet, things you've experienced yourself, things that you remember happening in your own life. They all creep into the work, but I would never pick up an actual person, fully rounded, 100% person, put them in a book and just call them something else. I think that's a dangerous path to follow.
Yeah, especially if they're reading it.
Exactly. And I don't think they would always recognise themselves, especially if you give them character flaws. If you make them a bit greedy or a bit jealous or a bit nasty in some way, people would never recognise themselves.
No.
They think they're the heroine.
Yes. We all want to be that.
I want to be the heroine. Of course they do.
So you've got 5 unforgivable things. You've got No Sister of Mine.
Yeah.
Be Careful What You Wish For.
Yeah.
And what is the latest novel from yourself?
Be Careful What You Wish For was the latest one that's been published. That's about a year ago.
Yeah.
It takes a good year to write a book, really, from idea to putting it down to editing. At least a year to write a book.
Mm.
I know there are lots of authors who can manage to write 2 or 3 a year, perhaps a summer book and a Christmas book every single year. I can't go at that pace. I've got other things happening in life. You know, I look after my grandchildren. I have other things I don't want to be doing by writing all the time. I don't want it to feel like a job. I don't want to feel burnt out. I want to do it because I enjoy it.
Yeah.
So I take my time. So I am writing a couple of novels at the moment, one that's more or less finished, one that I'm nearly halfway through, which is a little bit different, but neither of them... I've actually got a publishing contract at the moment, so that's the next step, is to see who wants to publish them.
Excellent. So I like the way you said I've got a couple of novels underway at the moment, so you're not busy then.
Well, one's more or less finished, so I'm just tweaking it. The other one was sort of one that was bubbling under and waiting to be written, which I'm now having a go at. And there's always more than one project on a go at a time. You know, I've usually got a short story in my head. I sent a couple of short stories off to magazines last week. It will take a while till I hear anything back. But, you know, if an idea comes, you want to start getting it on paper, really.
Yeah. And is that your advice to anybody out there that's thinking about getting into writing, to start with the short stories?
Well, unfortunately, the short story market has really contracted lately. It's very different from when I started. There are far fewer women's magazines accepting fiction now. And the ones that do, unfortunately, some of them will only accept from their little band of writers that they've used before.
Mm.
And the ones who are open to new writers, sometimes they're sort of taking all the rights. So the minute you sell them a story, it's not yours anymore.
Yeah.
They've taken the rights from you. You can't ever use that story again. You can't self-publish it. It's a bit worrying.
Mm.
We've never had to give up our copyright in the past. But nowadays, for the sake of maybe taking £100 for a story, you're giving up all rights to it, which means, in theory, they could turn it into a film. They could put it in a book.
Yeah.
They could make an audio version. They could do whatever they like with it. It's not yours anymore.
Mm.
And I like to own my fiction.
Yeah.
I like to know it's still mine.
Yes.
So it's very, very hard to get into short stories at the moment. A couple of magazines are still open and willing to take new writers. The People's Friend are fantastic in that regard.
Mm.
A bit slow to respond at the moment because I think with the other markets closing... Everyone's sending their stuff to People's Friend. They must have piles of it to read.
Yeah.
But when they do accept a story, the rights remain yours. You get paid for it. And it's lovely to see your story in print with a nice illustration. No feeling like it, really. Even years after first being published, it's still exciting to see your work in print, to know someone's reading it and enjoying it. And I don't think I'll ever lose that.
Now, we need more romance in the world. Romance is not dead. It's coming up to Valentine's Day, obviously, in 2022. So you've got loads going on, loads of books. And if people want to check you out, Vivian, you've got social media and you've got a website as well.
Yes, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. I think no writer can really get on in life without all those things these days. Publishers expect it. You have to do a little bit of self-promotion. You have to be available to your readers, you know, so they know a bit about you, so they can chat to you. So, yeah, I'm all the usual channels. There I am, Vivian Brown, author.
Lovely. It's been fascinating to talk to you. Hopefully we'll get you in the studio later in the year and when you've got your next novel out, give us a call and we can chat about that.
Thanks very much.
It's great to talk to you. Thanks for joining us on the book club today.
Thank you.
Thanks, Eve. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. That is Vivian Brown, who is a novelist, and you can check out her books online. Just type in Vivian Brown and you will find her books all over the place.